This is a replay of the Tuesday night, August 22nd WGN show, and we started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip for the world's best customer service. It's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. I'm here. And you're there, and I wish you'd join me. All right, we can talk about a number of things, but it's been interesting. Ever since News Nation had the story about the UFOs and what the government might know and what they're not telling us, story after story are coming out about people who supposedly know the truth. And some of them are downright hilarious. Others are absolutely disturbing. But what's of most interest to me is the number of people who claim that they know aliens. Yeah, like in their everyday life. I have one woman I saw online who was dating one, and I kid you not. So before we do anything else, I thought it would only be prudent if I asked, have you seen any aliens? I mean, not like in the sky that you can't identify, hence an unidentified flying object, that's the U, but maybe something closer to the ground. In one case, someone online swears she was dating a shape-shifting lizard. And she only knew of his true identity during coitus when he would shift back. We'll have to find her and have her on, maybe. But I'm real curious because this has captured the imagination of absolutely millions of Americans. I mean, you know, it's been great for News Nation. They got terrific ratings. But well beyond that, you know, we've talked about the hearings in Congress and everything else. And yes, this also came up because over the weekend, John and I were talking about shared experiences. And I mourn the days of Top 40 radio in the 50s and the 60s when all kids of the same age had a shared experience where they were all listening to the same night guy in their town, no matter who they were. And they could come back to school the next day and talk about what they heard on the radio, and everybody heard it. And that was a lot of fun. It also, by the way, 10, 15 years later, made oldies radio initially pretty easy to program because everybody liked and knew the same group of records. Of course, now there's not a shared experience in any way. Certainly, there could be a group bigger than the Beatles to sell more. But as far as having that shared impact, I don't know if it's possible anymore, period. And with that in mind, John and I were talking about what would it be, you know, what could create that type of a Beatlemania effect, you know, that type of almost mass hysteria, because every kid or every person was all interested in the same thing. And John was quick to reply. He said, aliens. And I thought, you know, good thought. That would do it. No doubt about it. Yes, if someone actually had proof, or better yet, was able to bring an alien to television or radio or even their own podcast, I think we would all be interested. And it's a fascination that we've shared for years. And those who are supposedly able to see on the other side of the veil and all those kind of things swear that they're already among us. Yeah. And then there's, of course, David Icke. And he was a sports announcer in Great Britain until he got the word of knowledge that the aliens were, in fact, not only here but controlling. And so... His podcasts are always interesting to hear, but you start to wonder as these reports come out how much of it could possibly be true, and why exactly are we hiding it, and what are we hiding, because that's been the thing about all the reports to date that we've heard is a lot of conjecture, but absolutely no proof, nothing tangible, and so I'm curious about your take on it. And particularly, if you run into one late at night or something of that nature, I half laugh when I say it. But with these millions of people who claim maybe not as much as Betty and Barney Hill, but claim to have a close encounter of the alien kind, then I want to know if you're among them. So you don't have to even identify yourself if you're afraid that it would lead you to ridicule. There was a guy in Orlando, when I was in Denver about 40 years ago, there was a guy in Orlando who started this company selling alien abduction insurance. I think he still does. Now it's become a big thing. But I remember he sold me a policy. And one of the things it protected was you against ridicule. And I thought, yep, that would be the biggest value, I think, of the policy, which, of course, was more tongue-in-cheek. But so, if you've had an encounter, I want to know about it. 888-876-5593. 8888 Raleigh. And we hear all about the obscure, supposedly takings, if you will. Yeah, if you've been abducted, I really want to know about that. And the anal probes, heaven forbid, and more. But just daily, if you haven't, do you suspect somebody that you know is an alien? Yeah, now I don't know what would cause you to come to this conclusion, but if there are that many million among us, well, we all have to know some of them, and not realize it. So, 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. That's out there in bizarro land, but just as bizarre is the fact that you in America do not own your own identity. And we've talked a lot about this because it isn't in the government's best interest to make sure that you do. And where this applies, well, actually now in so many different ways, but to what I'm referring is the data that is amassed on you and your habits. And for instance, if you have a credit card, you don't own the data on what you bought or when you bought it. The credit card company does. And that leads to, in fact, reporting and credit scores, which, of course, are a guess at best. Because remember, the credit score is not based solely, in some cases not even largely, on your paying habits. It's an amalgamation that actuaries come up with to predict whether you're going to be a good or a bad risk. And so they do this based upon looking at all the data they've amassed on you. And you're saying, I didn't give them permission to that. Well, you didn't have to because you don't own your own identity. Now, in countries like Germany, it's just the other way around. They're very adamant that people's identities cannot be breached in that way. And here, not the case. And I contend that's because most people don't understand how ubiquitous it is and how much interest it is in the government not to have you own your own identity. For instance, you not only have a credit reporting agency or maybe an agency that like the MIB, the Medical Information Bureau, that has your medical records or some of them. You have various entities that have bits and parts of you. The motor vehicle department knows if you've been getting tickets, et cetera and so forth. Well, there are, individuals who have firms that amalgamate this insurance and this information and bring it as your one-stop shopping if you want to know everything about an individual. And I think to myself, why go to a judge for a warrant anymore? Just buy it from Choice Point. So why am I blathering on about this at the moment? Well, there's been more in the news about the Equifax hack. And you might remember that happened in 2017. Equifax used to own Choice Point, by the way, but they spun it off. But in the meantime, this is 6 years ago, and has much changed? Well, the reason it was in the news is a law has been enacted, but the deal with this law is that it is it's a regulation more than a law, and it is affecting any company that is governed by the SEC. And this is designed to tell you if you've been a victim of breach. And the regulation went into effect last month, and it requires companies to declare databases to shareholders, consumers, and regulators within 4 days of discovery. Now, of course, to the contrary, Equifax 6 years ago waited, about 6 months. And that's just when their trouble started. Yeah, it didn't end there because they set up a website for you to check whether you had been breached. And initially, by checking that, you gave up your right to sue them. And the government finally stepped in on that and said, no, not so quick. You're going to amend that. But the other thing is that the security protocol was so weak on the site where you could check this information that, in fact, you were more likely to be hacked by doing it. And in fact, there was a spoof site set up very close to it that, amassed all sorts of data until that went down. The phony site received about 200,000 hits before it was taken down. And remember, when you were checking, you're usually giving them your name, your address, your social security number, everything it takes to be you. Yeah. So the idea that you're trying to check to see if you've been impacted, that would impact you. That's pretty obnoxious. So here's the SEC that says, okay, you're no longer legally able to sit on the data leaks. Well, yes, if you're regulated by the SEC, but what if you're not? And what if you're the government? And the rule requires companies to be proactive in mitigating cybersecurity risks. And therein lies the rub. Most, not all, but most of these incursions could probably have been stopped with uber emphasis on security, but there's really nothing in it for the companies to do that because there aren't many penalties when you're breached. And so until the average person stands up and says, hey, you know, I don't want you to be able to control my data, we're not going to see anything change. And I think the first step needs to be that you own your own identity. And that's not even broached. So thought I'd bring that up, and also ask you if you've been breached and how that worked out for you. And you get letters all the time. I do, and this or that has been breached. And usually, in the past, it's been months later, and I do mean months. In some cases, you never hear about it until you're conducting a search and find out that your social security number's on the dark web. Very good. So it seems to me that this could come to a colossal halt if there was something in place to protect you. And it's interesting because today we're talking about protecting your identity from AI and what's going on with the writers and with the actors. And by the way, I don't foresee that ending anytime soon because these people have to fight to the death. The stakes are way too high to lose the right to control their identity. But we'll see ultimately how that goes. So only tangentially related, but still certainly in the news at late. So that's the deal where that is. And I would think that more people are violated every day than have any awareness. And a friend of mine actually was listening to me on WGN's stream, and she said, well, I'm in Orlando, and I'm hearing all these commercials for Orlando. I said, well, yeah, sure, that's easy enough to affect, and it is a pretty good way to market. And so she said, what do they have to know about me? Well, the answer is more than you think and less than you fear. In terms of anytime you connect to any stream, yes, the entity who is creating the stream knows what your IP address is. There's no way around that. And when they do know what your IP address is, they're going to know about where you are. Now, I say about where you are because your IP address is given to you by your provider, whether it's cable broadband or, Fios, fiber, whatever. And it's fairly easy to pinpoint in the databases what block of IPs go to what area. This doesn't mean they know what street you're on necessarily. But that information can probably be had too, but not quite as easily. But the idea that there's full anonymity when you're online, no, there's never. And even if you you check off all the boxes of, don't track me, don't do this, don't do that, the thought that you have anonymity is an absolute pipe dream. All right, so enough of that. I want to know what's on your mind, and I'll talk about radio, because I love it. And so does Bob Crane, and that makes him a kindred spirit, because he did something about it, you know. Many decades ago, we all were bitching about what was happening to radio reception, how great it was in the 50s and the 60s, and slowly how radios, some had great sound or lots of features, but reception was just terrible, particularly on AM. Well, Bob Crane vowed that he'd do something about it. And not only did he, but with every radio he brings out, they have a ton of features you don't find anywhere else, and the hallmark is great reception. And so the newest addition to the fold is the CC Skywave SSB2. Single sideband is really great. And in fact, we've been talking about Maui and things like that. When there is that level of an emergency and you've got no smartphones and even the radio stations are having trouble getting information, which has been the case over there, I'll tell you what, the first responders are communicating on single sideband. And if you want to hear it first, that's the radio to have. Now, the CC Skywave SSB not only is a great emergency radio, but it's a terrific travel radio and companion. It weighs only 8 ounces. The reception of AM and FM is excellent for its small size. The audio is sharp and clear. And not only will you get the information first, but you'll get the weather band and weather alert. And also, when there's not a big to-do on single sideband, you'll hear ham radio operators from all over the world. And of course, the only way to find out what's on the sideband is with a radio that picks it up. So the CC Skywave SSB is a true travel lover's radio, and it's just that, or radio's lover travel radio, however you want to look about it. It's just a great addition to your arsenal. You can go to ccradio.com anytime, ccradio.com. You can call them if you can't go online, 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE, best customer service in the world. Oh, sure, you can go to Amazon and get quicker shipping, but if you go to ccradio.com, you not only can read all about the CC Skyway, but get great information on radio as well, and sign up for their newsletter if you want to hear it first when they're developing a new product. So ccradio.com, the CC Skywave SSB2. You tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio.
People are talking, telling me that you're untrue. I wonder why they keep telling me what I should do.
I'm Raleigh James, and that's the Essex. Yeah, Anita Hume's wonderful voice, and What I Don't Know Won't Hurt Me. It was the flip side of A Walk-In Miracle on 1963, and Roulette, and I promised Fran I would play that for her, and it was, I thought it was a great little record. And of course, the Essex were hampered by the fact that they were active duty service individuals when they were in the group. They were in the Marine Corps, and so they couldn't really take advantage of their hits by touring. They did get to the Apollo occasionally or on Bandstand or Ed Sullivan, but for the most part, it was pretty abbreviated. And in the summer of 63, we got a couple big hits, and of course they were on Roulette. So you know when you look at the writer's credit, Moish Levy and Henry Glover are there. Exactly who wrote it, who knows? Anyway, we'll get to Bernie's, a first-time caller in Arkansas, after the news, and we'll find out what's going on right now from David Jennings in the WGN Radio Newsroom on WGN Radio.
We to feel your happy mind would make me feel divine. To hold you ever so tight, my sweet, would make my life complete. Remember how we now we will never part. This to promise from the spark.
Do you remember?
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and those are the Velours. Yeah, another one of the great doo-wop groups on Onyx. Yeah, what a terrific little label for that. And it was Jimmy P. who requested that in honor of Scotty, who I know loved the Velours, and so did I. Yeah, New York doo-wop at its finest, mid-50s. All right, so we got a first-time caller, and that is Vern. And Vern is in Arkansas. So, Vern, welcome to WGN Radio.
Thank you, Raleigh. I'm glad to finally get through here. I've been listening to you for some time. I'm an old broadcaster here, too, but I mean old, like 91 years old.
Oh, that's great. So tell me about your broadcasting career.
It started in my hometown when AM broadcasting split up into the little town radio stations. I was just walking out of high school in 1950. And I walked right into working at KWBG in Boone, Iowa, way back when.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Yes, it is, because it got me out of the idea of going to college and into the idea of learning how to learn.
Well,
and I did that, wound up working at WHO in Des Moines.
Ooh, with hands only. Well, the neat thing about you starting at KWBG in 1950 is they started in 1950 also. They were a daytime originally, probably when you started, and then they went to nighttime the next year.
Yeah, that's right. As I say, broadcast radio, after the FCC did whatever they did, they opened up the little market radio, and every town started to have their own radio station back when.
Yeah,
now they've automated them all to the point that there's nothing left to it.
You're so right. Yes, keep watching Boone grow. KWBG 1590.
Yes, as a matter of fact, they printed a whole bunch of stationery to that effect.
Yeah.
And then the Census Bureau came out with the new figures, and Boone had lost about 300 people.
Okay.
So it became keep watching business grow.
Oh, there you go. All right. Well, good.
Good.
Yeah. You were talking about single sideband radio.
Yeah.
Do you know much about single sideband?
Well, I know how it works as far as that goes, because as you know, the carrier wave is going to be the dominant frequency, but you're going to have above it and below it side frequencies, and depending on how that's mixed and what receiver you have, you can actually get information out of it. It's usually going to be two-way radio or, you know, ship to shore or something like that, but there's a surprising amount on there. Okay, so what did I miss?
That the first responders don't use single sideband. First responders are local and generally are using digital radio anymore.
Oh, that's interesting.
Most of the business radio these days is digital.
Well, that's a shame. Bob Crane had told me that first responders were still using it, so they're not, huh?
No, not really. I don't know where he got that, because I have in my hand my Crane radio that I couldn't get along without.
Yeah.
But I don't know how they got into the mix. But single sideband came into being during World War II. The Air Force pressed people like Art Collins in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, into building radio stable enough that you could use single sideband. Problem before that was that the radios wandered around so much you couldn't hold the frequency stable enough.
Yeah, the drifting was a bitch. But I think the first patent for it predates World War One. I think the Navy, back when they were experimenting, were trying it. But you're right, it didn't make a lot of much sense because of drifting. And so they had some high-power SSB transmitters in New York and stuff like that. But they also used it of FDM, which I'm sure you're familiar with, frequency division multiplexing, over phone lines. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, was the 30s. So yeah, I guess amateur radio using it became in earnest after World War II. Didn't the Strategic Air Command establish some type of standards for it?
Yeah, Art Collins built a wonderful set of radios that most of us couldn't afford, but they were stable enough that they made single sideband a workable way to go.
Oh, yeah. No, Collins' S-Line was my favorite. Yeah, good stuff.
Mine, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. those gray
boxes. I sure like them.
Yeah, those gray boxes, they were... I had a friend who had the complete line of S-Line when he was like 16 years old, and he also had a Corvette, and I thought this was just the neatest guy in the world.
it gave rise to the term boat anchor, which is what they were on the table.
Well, they were, and of course, what they all are today, sadly, so many great things that have just gone the way of all flesh.
Yeah, technology has taken us into a place where we really didn't need to go.
No,
you asked.
I agree.
You mentioned that I was from Arkansas.
Yeah.
I used to work in Washington, D.C. for a time, and when I'd get on the plane with my shaving kit and take off for the Midwest, and then at the end of the week, they'd say, "Now, where was it you were going?" And I said, "I hope you never find out."
that's great. But no, today I think our biggest problem is that we probably know more about technology and less about the wisdom of how to use it. And I think we're making some classic mistakes at this stage of the game.
Absolutely right, because all of it's predicated on the electrical grid staying up. And when that goes down, then what are you going to talk on?
You know, absolutely. And this is one of my pet peeves, how we in America don't preserve our infrastructure. We're just waiting for that pulse bomb. And there are so many things that could be done, but it would be so easy to take us out. And nobody's really acting on this.
Yes, that's why my amateur radio station has a battery on
I love it.
The desk.
That's great.
Yes, and I still remember Morse code.
You know, so do I. I remember it all. 20 words a minute. Yes.
Very good.
Yes, but of course, you know, nobody uses that anymore.
No, and the young people wouldn't know where to go look for it even.
Well, right, and it's not on the tests, which is interesting. You know, used to be if you wanted an extra class, you had to have those 20 words a minute.
I guess it
right.
was.
Right, 13 for a general.
Yeah, and then I thought it was, I don't remember what it was, but I have an extra class.
Yeah, you knew it. 20 words a minute. Yeah, absolutely. And you never forget it.
No, thank God. It's always there. That's what I say. When everything else comes to a standstill, those of us who remember Morse code.
That's right.
Morse code will be the only ones talking to each other.
Yeah, I think you're right, and it may be sooner than we think.
Oh, I hope not.
Oh, so do I.
I digress, as I say. You get a lot of interesting people to talk to out there, I'm sure, but enjoyed visiting with you.
I hope you're going to call again. Thank you so much, Vern.
Yeah, well, if propagation allows, as I say, my little Sea Crane portable radio here, Sky, whatever it is, is what I listen to at night. And while I have 91-year-old pains, don't get old, but enjoy. And I enjoy you.
Well, thank you so much, and I'll look forward to our next conversation. Thanks, Vern.
Okay, right. Goodbye.
Good
Have a
deal.
Good evening.
You too. So how neat. I thoroughly enjoyed that. We'll get to Eduardo in Tampa, going to talk about ATC, and plenty of room for you and whatever is on your mind, particularly if you've encountered an alien. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.
Everything depends on you. Oh, hey, Mr. Dreamcatcher, bring her back to me and make my dream come true.
when I said goodbye to my love. I didn't mean to make her cry. I didn't realize that I loved. Now I need her by my side. It's a dream merchant. Bring her back to me and make my dream come true. You should have told the spoon to stop it.
I'm Raleigh James. It was Marianne in Chicago who said, play your favorite Jerry Butler record, and I'm doing it. Yeah, that's my very, very, very favorite, Mr. Dream Merchant, Mercury. Yeah, so 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And we've got Eduardo, and he is in Tampa. So, Eduardo, what's happening tonight?
Yeah, a couple of things. I was so shocked to see this, although you probably know this with that rain, it made Palm Springs into like a mud thing. They showed a reporter getting stuck in it, and even there was like a swimming pool that was underneath that because of all that rain that came down from that hurricane over there.
Right.
Yeah.
Here's why, because it's a desert community, and the desert is like concrete. I mean, it just is not in any way porous. So when you get enough rain, it's just flooding. And you can see things like, you know, Cabazon. I saw some pictures of that, you know, and others where it's just flooded, and Palm Springs as well. But how could it not? Because the desert's not capable of handling that type of rain.
Just a couple inches. That's all it does it? Is that...
Well, you know, it's literally, you know, the desert is just not porous, so it just it doesn't seep into the soil or you know the land in any easy way. So if you have too much rain,
like if you get grass,
right, exactly, or you know traditional soil or clay or whatever. No, this is just like pouring water on concrete. So it's going to flood.
I've been there, and I've been there in August, too, but never when it was like that.
Oh, right. Well, you know, this is rare. Let's face it. This was due to a tropical storm that's usually not there. And so what happened, of course, is the roads turned into rivers. And, you know, periodically that would happen. I remember in L.A. a couple times where that would happen in the San Fernando Valley, and occasionally you'd see somebody go to work in their bass boat. But... you know, it was always fun. It was always on the news, but it will happen. But when you're looking at an area where the average monthly rainfall is usually an inch, I think in August it's like a quarter of an inch or less. And so here you had one day where it was more than 2.5 inches. Well, how could it not flood?
Right.
So yeah, it's just got nowhere to go.
Yeah, that was something, seeing those people getting carried away in those machines, you know, with the big claw.
Yeah.
They were like inside it just being hauled off.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and you're seeing car parts floating down streets and all this, and yeah, one person called it battle damage. Sure, it's, you know, the entire valley there is absolutely inundated, and you would expect that.
Yeah, because I remember when I was there in August, I think it was a couple of years ago, I like to walk. Oh, my goodness. I had to go inside because it was like 100 degrees and over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was pretty intense.
Yeah.
Walking in that heat.
Oh, it is. And you add that much water, suddenly you've got humidity, which you usually don't. The other thing is you get sinkholes. And so that's
I saw like I think it was like mud coming up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The mud holes, but you get
okay.
true sinkholes, and there were people when you talk about you know the buckets and all that. That was mostly Cathedral City, which is east of Palm Springs, where a bunch of people were rescued with a bulldozer. They were lifted to safety, but yeah,
right.
Man, you get a sinkhole, and man, then all bets are really off.
Wow.
So, yeah, but expected, you know, as minute they had that weather forecast, at Palm Springs recorded over 3 inches of rain on Sunday alone, which is, I think, history for them as far as in one day. So, yeah, you're going to get it. And I-10 was closed for a while, which was interesting. Now, that usually doesn't happen, period, but they closed it overnight for at least one night due to flooding. So it happens, but, you know, I guarantee you, give it next week and you won't even know it. You still need to do some cleanup, but you're not going to see anybody floating down the street.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, moving forward on the air traffic controllers, so they're saying there was a shortage of those people, and it takes like 2 years to train them.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe in some of these, I don't know, high schools, because I went to one of these where you did this half-day work and half-day school, which I'm definitely a proponent. I wish a lot of people all across would be doing that. Maybe you can get into air traffic controllers, you know, get a little bit more interest in that.
They've done a lot of changes since I was very familiar with the system. It used to be when you were going for ATC, you'd have to go to Oklahoma City. And you'd train at, Meharry, I don't remember the guy's name, but it was like Michael Meharry or something. But anyway, it was the training center you'd go. And then I don't remember it being 2 years. I remember it being about 6 months. And at that point, you would be assigned. And you would make your choices, first, second, and third, of whether there's three different possibilities when you're being deployed. And one is to go to center. The other is to go to tower. And the third is a flight service station, an FSS. You get a little less on the GS scale if you go into an SSS, but it's easier work. Tower can be grueling. Center is pretty good. Hang on a minute. Don't go away. Okay. John says the news is coming, so I'm going, and we'll be back in moments here on WGN Radio. Raleigh James. Those, of course, are the Chris Corsairs from LaGrange, North Carolina, the Uzel brothers and their cousin. And they were in New Jersey when Abner Spector discovered them and put them on Tough Records, and a little label that also had the J-Nets, and that's about it. But, yeah, the Hearts, in any event, that was kind of a medley of the Corsairs' hits, and it is the one that Fran wanted to hear. So happy to do that. So we're talking to Eduardo in Tampa about ATC. So, yeah, I remembered it was Mike Maroney. That's where you used to have to go to school in Oklahoma City at Will Rogers Airport. It was, like I said, it was 6 months. And then, you know, you put in for the, and they paid you, by the way, while you were training. You got a slight GS scale pay. And then they gave you about 48 hours to go to your destination once this was over. And, you know, everybody was kind of hoping they'd get the center they wanted, or if they wanted tower, or, you know, very few wanted flight service station, but you could get it. In any event, that was the deal. Now, you could not be over 30 to enroll in training. You know, you take the spatial test, and once they determined that you were kind of good material and they interview you, you had to be under 30 to get in. and you had to retire at 60, no matter what. And those were the rules. It was 100% out of Mike Maroney. And then, of course, the Patco strike changed the world when Reagan was in, you know, because he fired all the air traffic controllers. And
Right. I remember that, yeah.
Right, and wouldn't allow them to apply for any GS jobs ever again. And so they had to scramble. Well, the result ultimately is there's not only this, what used to be Mike Maroney, it's now like the FAA Academy, and it's got thing. But in addition to that, schools all over the country offer ATC training. There's a number of them that are accredited to do that, like Embry-Riddle in Daytona Beach or Embry-Riddle in Arizona in Prescott. And the Embry-Riddle, by the way, is a great aeronautical university. It really is. So for people who are into aeronautical stuff, I would highly recommend Embry-Riddle. But in any event, in Florida, you like in Melbourne, FIT, the Florida Institute of Technology, for instance, there's a number of places where you can go. Of course, you're not going to get paid if you go, and you can get 2 and 4 year degrees, which will do more than just allow you to do air traffic control. But when you're saying that you got to retire at 30, bar none, at 60, bar none, and you can't apply to be in there if you're over 30, this narrows the field when there are openings. And it's my understanding, I have not, you know, all my information, by the way, is ancient, but I have not kept up with it, but it's my understanding that the shortage is not as great here as it is in Europe.
Okay.
Sure. The other thing is, air traffic control, you have to speak English. I don't care if you're in New Guinea. You got to speak English. It is the language of air traffic control worldwide. It was decided a long time ago. Well, I had a friend who was working Miami Center, and Miami Center is the area of the Caribbean, and so planes from South America would be handed off to her, and then she'd hand them off to Miami Tower or wherever they were going. Well, there were a series of questions you'd ask, and what she discovered on a few of the South American carriers was that the answers came back in the same order, no matter what order she asked the questions. So she recognized that the people she was talking to couldn't speak a word of English. And nobody wanted to take her complaint. Now, at the moment, what you've got is the number of fully trained controllers who haven't retired yet, from what I understand, has been falling by about 10%. While air traffic has been rising by about 5%. So that creates the shortage. And, you know, You'll hear about near misses and things like that. That happens, but not, and that usually more is a tower incident than a center incident. But it doesn't happen nearly as much as you'd think when you realize how many planes are in the air. Now, one of the problems, if we really wanted to go into this, is that the computers and the technology at most of the centers and probably at the towers as well is ancient technology. And so that's something that, and you know, that's true, of course, with our missile silos and everything else. And that's something at some point that that the government absolutely needs to address.
So I think we were talking about underground pipes the other day. That's the other thing we got, I guess, upgrade.
Oh, well, not all of our infrastructure, not just some of
it.
I mean, it's just criminal. And so, you know, I don't know what they're going to do, because for a while, COVID was sort of their gift from the universe, from the standpoint of there were less people traveling and less planes in the sky. But now, that you're looking at more planes and a shortage of about 3,000 workers, this is causing a lot of the facilities to only be partially staffed. And so it's a problem, because they stopped training completely during COVID, but people still retired. So I heard their target was to hire 1,500 new controllers by the end of the year. Now, whether okay. or not that is controllers who have been trained at one of the schools like Embry-Riddle or prospects who are going to be trained at the old Monroney, which is now the FAA Academy.
Okay.
And I read somewhere where, you know, I said they had to retire at 60. I read somewhere where they lowered that to 56. So Don't know, but I know the golden age was 30. If you attained the age of 31, they wouldn't train you.
Maybe they'll change that now.
Well, here's the problem. Training can be expensive, especially if they're going to be doing it while they're paying you. And they hire you at 30, the most they can possibly get is basically 25 years out of you. Then you're basically forced to retire.
Yeah.
So they don't want to do that, but they need to look at the technology, and what can I say? So yeah, it's one of the many things that should be addressed.
Okay, I was going to talk one more thing before I get off, and the bacteria in ice cream machines.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, was it like Listeria?
Yeah,
the milkshakes. Yeah, milkshakes.
Yep. Frugal's restaurant in Tacoma, Washington.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was reading about that. And poor Washington. They wanted to, and yeah, it was, they blamed it on poorly cleaned ice cream machines. And I guess a couple of people died, and you know, half a dozen people were hospitalized or whatever. And the one.
Yeah, they showed one in Louisiana. And oh my goodness, that one was really dirty. The one they showed, the one in Louisiana, it was really, really.
Well, it's
had really dirty, and they had the coli.
Right, it's Listeria usually. You know, I'll tell you, there have been a number of convenience stores that, you know, offer the soft drinks where you can, you know, go fill up on the big gulp or whatever. I know that's proprietary 7-Eleven, but everybody has their version of that. And, you know, it's almost like in some of these machines, I can literally taste the dirt. I mean, I know that seems like that can't be possible, but there are absolutely places where I say, you know, this just doesn't taste right. And I don't think that what I'm tasting is Listeria or anything remotely like that. But nonetheless, I do think that it's poor cleaning all the way around.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know what it is about the Seattle area because, you know, there have been so many things. Years ago, they Jack in the Box killed some people over the same type of food poisoning and all that. It's happened several times up there. So I don't know.
Yeah, and it's hard. And then what are you going to do? You're going to just go in the back and say, well, let me go and check this out and see, are you producing this from a clean machine? I mean, that's kind of a little.
Well, you know, I think there's you can probably check to see what the health department ratings are. And I don't know what the Frugals on Pacific Avenue, that's the one in Tacoma, was. But it would be interesting to see what their rating was. And the problem with Listeria is that it is a delayed onset. You know, I'm used to the kind of food poisoning where I eat it and within 5 hours I'm losing lunch. Well, Listeria can wait 70 days before you know you've got a problem.
Wow, 70 days.
70 days. And so, you know, that's where you start to say, who knows? And in this case, I guess they trace back the cases to this one location, but who knows? You know, it's not a very common food poisoning, but, you know, well over 1,000 people a year in America get it. You know, so they're saying if you had a milkshake at Frugal's, basically in June or July, and I don't know about their locations in Montana or the others in Washington State, I haven't heard anything about it. Now, I also don't know. Let's say you did have a milkshake at the Frugal's in question. I have no idea if there's a test for Listeria before you develop symptoms.
Yeah.
I got to look that up. I don't know. I know after you develop symptoms, it's pretty obvious you got a problem. But if it's taken you 70 days to incubate, it's probably pretty bad, too.
I guess most commercials have that little city sticker saying last expansion. I'm mispronouncing here. You know, where they check, you know, to see the health department. You put a little diploma on the window.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
I mean, that's something that go by. Say, oh, okay, this place is legit. I mean, they've been, you know, taking care of their stuff so that people don't get sick.
And that's good. But I mean, even the healthiest can have a mishap too, but you probably got a better shot if you've got somebody who's bragging about their safety ratings.
Yeah. Yeah. I would feel comfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Los Angeles, they always used to do that on the news. I don't remember which TV channel it was, but on the evening news, they would, you know, once a month do that, go with the health department and, you know, unveil the baddest offenders. And invariably, it was places I like to eat. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes it's better not knowing. But, yeah, I guess you can do a blood test for Listeria, but, you know, that's pretty, you know, you probably really want to believe you've got a problem before you're going to go get a test for that.
All right. Let me get up here, and maybe I'll call back.
Good deal. I'll look forward to it. Thanks.
Thank
Appreciate
you very much.
It. Yeah.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. So, yeah, I'm sure there's, like, culture tests and things like that, too, but I think you have to develop some kind of symptom. I don't know. The last thing I am is a Listeria expert. Thank God I have virtually no experience with that one. But food poisoning in general, hey, I'm the queen. All right, so 888-876-5593. We're going to talk blood pressure machines. But before that, we're going to get John and Waukegan's request, and maybe I can play it as our next bumper. So, John, what do you want to hear?
Hello. Cowboys to girls.
Okay, you'll hear it next. Hello. What's going on? What's going on with your phone?
How do you order those old hits like that, the funk that you play? Where do you order them from?
Well, I've got all the original. I've got all the original 45s. But I'll tell you what: if you just go to YouTube, virtually every one of them's on there. And I don't advise you using a ripper. But if you're willing to take the time to record them in real time, you can get some pretty good quality out of that.
Okay.
All right, I'll play Cowboys to Girls for you next.
Mm-hmm.
All right, good deal. All right, then we'll find out about blood pressure monitors. And we've got Paul from Iroquois. We're going to talk cassette tapes. Oh, man. Well, I guess better than 8-tracks. But yeah, if that's your claim to fame, you're not doing too well. 1 7/8, please. All right, and more coming up on WGN Radio. And I've been remiss. I didn't set it up yet. So I got the Gene Chandler version. And I know that John wanted the Intruders. So, hey, I can do that too. I hope. I'm going to prove it here in just a moment. Here we go.
Cowboys, girl.
I remember when I used to play shoot 'em up.
Shoot 'em up. Bang. Baby,
I remember when I chased the girls and beat them up. But I was young and didn't understand. But now I'm a grown-up man. I know girls are made for kissing. Never knew what I was missing.
Nobody sounds like Little Sonny of the Intruders, Sam Brown. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. The Intruders, Cowboys to Girls, happy to do that. And the Intruders did a number of things other than Cowboys to Girls. I like love it, like a baseball game, and of course Together, I'll Always Love My Mama, I Want to Know Your Name, and on and on and on. Philadelphia group, and glad John requested that. All right, now, first-time caller, and the world stops and we defer to first-time callers, so we're about to hit the news. But we'll meet Steve in Milwaukee. Welcome, Steve. Let's see here. I'll set this up to WGN Radio. Thanks for calling. Steve. Well, we've lost Steve. All right. I don't know if John warns you, but when he puts you on hold, you don't hear anything until you're on the air, because I didn't set up this studio that way. And so I've never bothered to fix it. And I could, but I got to take out the processing to do it at this point. And so I'd rather be processed than you hear it. So if you'll call back, Steve, I will appreciate that. And then you'll be put on hold and you will hear positively nothing until you're on the radio. But I promise you will be first. Then we'll get Cindy and Paul and James and you. But right now we'll get the news on WGN Radio.
Call an editor.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, one of my favorites by the Manhattans. And it was Karen in Chicago who said, play your favorite record by the Manhattans. And the reason I picked it, it is one of my faves, but it also has an interesting distinction. It's only a B-side, but it was the B-side of the first song they released on Carnival and the last song they released on Carnival. So the first one in 1965, it was the B-side of There Goes a Fool, and the last one on Carnival in 1969 was the B-side of Till You Come Back to Me, which is also a fine record. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. Now, I believe we're changing the subject entirely and going to talk about blood pressure monitors. Sounds good to me. Hello, Cindy.
Yes, Raleigh. I can only talk for a few minutes because I had a thick migraine, and sometimes I can't get my words out.
Okay.
But anyhow, it wasn't that bad of a migraine, and I've been getting them since grammar school. But then anyhow, now they have pills for that, so it wasn't that bad.
Oh, good.
But anyhow, ever since the summer, when I've been to the doctor maybe four times since the summer started, and they got all new blood pressure machines. And my blood pressure registered 138 over, like, 88.
Okay.
And, like, normally my blood pressure is, like, 120, 110 over 60. So the last time I went, I think it was Friday, I went to the doctor, and she met, you know, they took my blood pressure. It was 138 over 88. So then my doctor's like, well, I'm going to take it the old-fashioned way. I'm the old-fashioned, old blood pressure.
Absolutely. That's the only way to get a good reading is doing it manually.
And then it was 110 over 60. Like it normally is,
right.
Or one, you know, normally 120.
Correct.
And
correct.
She said that, you know, so, you know, what is this, a class action?
No. You got to understand something, the way the technology is. There are limitations to blood pressure machines that are automatic. There just are. And it's always better to manually take your own blood pressure. Have your stethoscope and do it yourself. I'm a firm believer in that. Now, for expediency, you can use the monitors. But remember, they're not exact. But not only are they not exact, what you really need to do is take it three times and spend more than a minute between time. Now, the other thing is people don't realize with blood pressure monitors, these are automatic monitors that, you know, you push a button, it inflates, and it gives you a digital reading. The way it works is it's counting from zero up, not from, say, 180 down. When you do it manually, you raise it to a point that is above what the blood pressure could be, and then coming down is how you read it. You read when the beat starts and when the beat stops, and that's how you're getting your systolic and diastolic pressure. But with these machines, it's the other way. So it's vitally important that when that machine starts to inflate and get a reading, that you do not move that arm, period. Now, the other thing is sit in the right position. Have both of your feet on the floor. Be sitting erect. Have your arm at least at heart's level. People ignore this and don't understand how vital this is to taking a reading. But you need to take three of them if you're going to use an electronic machine and then average them.
Well, I sent the one I bought from Amazon back. I'm not a medical person. I majored in accounting, and I don't have talent for it, and I just have limitations. I know what I could do. I know what I can't do, and it just is, you know, I sent it back, and just, I don't know. I mean, how could they operate a doctor's office with...
Well, that, by the way, is a big discussion. Good doctors will still take it manually. And some doctors, their staff, unfortunately, is so lackadaisical that they'll get you in a room, you'll barely be sitting down, they'll slap a cuff on you and automatically take it. It's like, that's ridiculous. You should be sitting down a minimum of 5 minutes resting before they try a blood pressure reading.
That's what my cousin said.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So if you're getting anything else, just ignore it and ask the doctor to take it manually. That's
because I've always exercised my whole life,
and
I don't have eating disorders.
Yeah. Right, it has nothing to do with that. So that's the way to take it.
Well, I'm not overweight where, you know, I would get high blood pressure.
There's a lot of reasons you might get high blood pressure that have nothing to do with overweight or your eating habits, believe me. There's a ton of them. And, you know, if you're the autoimmune queen like me, you're going to have high blood pressure secondary to other things you've got. It's just the way it is. But as far as measuring it, you can measure it accurately as long as you follow the rules. Having rested for 5 minutes, having your feet on the floor, having your arm elevated to at least your heart level, and doing it manually.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. I'm just going to go to sleep.
Yep. Sounds good to me. All right. Good luck.
Don't now for migraines.
Yeah.
All right.
And don't worry about it. Don't add it to your worry list.
All right.
All right, thanks.
Okay,
appreciate
bye-bye.
It. Bye, Cindy. Yeah, because, you know, let's face it, 138 over, you know, 81 is not terrible. Now, depending on what you're dealing with, you might not want it that high, but, you know, that's not the point where I'd say, oh, you better think about medicating it. No. And, you know, the prevailing logic changes from time to time, medical science being inexact at best. And, yeah, I do, for laziness, very often use the electronic meters, and the brand I actually like is Oxaline. And but even with that, I take John's blood pressure a few times a day because, you know, of his hemorrhagic stroke. And I'll tell you what, I do the three and I average them. And I always wait about a minute between readings, and they'll vary widely. Like one might be 140 and the next one 119. So it's just the nature of the electronic beast. I don't really put much credence in that. If I had a real reason to worry, you betcha I'd pull out that stethoscope and do it manually. But like everybody else, I'm lazy. So 888-876-5593 would be 8888 Raleigh. And let's see what we got with Paul in Iroquois County. So, Paul, what's up tonight? Paul? We lost Paul. He wanted to talk about cassette tapes. Oh, Paul, call us back. Love to talk about cassette tapes. And, yeah, I know, 1 7/8, they work better than you'd expect for that. And of course, cartridges, you know, the 8-tracks, they were 3 3/4, but I'll tell you what, that moving head concept was utter insanity. And and bad results followed, obviously. But yeah, people sometimes ask, you know, why is it that with reel to reel, I really want to be at least, you know, 7.5 IPS or maybe even 15 for real quality, but with a cassette, I'm at 1 7/8. Well, part of it has to do with the way cassette machines were manufactured and all that. But the bottom line is, yeah, you got a 15 IPS reel to reel, it's probably going to outshine that cassette. And it also going to be how you measure the quality, because there's a number of things involved that you might not hear on the usual player that you're using. So we'll get to, James's stories. And there's room for you too. 888-876-5593. It's been one of those days for me. I've had to spend a lot of time on legal matters and crafting legal responses. And that, you know, I actually have a certain enjoyment in doing this. But the problem is that when I'm immersed in that, if there is, say, a box of crackers near me and a Mexican Coke, yeah, right. So at this point, I think, I've had one too many crackers today. Yeah, I'm not going to say I've had one too many Mexican Cokes, although I may be getting at that point. But I think right now, yeah, the crackers are deciding to revolt. All right, well, on that revolting thought, we'll pick it up in moments here on WGN Radio.
Baby, baby, you don't understand how much I love you, baby, and how much I wanna be your only man. Oh, baby. Baby, 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 you don't have to go. Stay a little while
baby. I want to talk to you just a little more. I see the little tears in your eyes about to fall. You are wondering if I'm for real.
But if you cry, I wonder why you cry. I tell you, no lie, this is how I feel. Baby, I'm for real.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. What a wonderful song. Barry Gordy, Marvin Gaye wrote that, yeah, with Anna, and so I was thinking Gordy, his wife. And actually, that's the originals, and that is not the first rendition of that. Originally, it was the Bells I Hear, Bobby Taylor, and the originals. The originals actually were backup vocalists for Motown artists. They were on some Jimmy Ruffin stuff like What Becomes of the Broken Hearted and David Ruffin, My Whole World Ended and all that. And Marvin Gaye wanted to produce and wanted to write. And for whatever reason, Norman Whitfield, and I say for whatever reason, because normally he was doing a lot of, like, psychedelic soul stuff at the time, but he was involved with kind of a return to basics, almost a doo-wop feel for it. And so the Bells I Hear, Bobby Taylor, like I say, not in the Vancouvers, because I think some of the CDs have released it as Bobby Taylor and the Vancouvers. It wasn't. It was Bobby Taylor and the originals. Actually, I think they tried all of the originals doing a lead on the Bells I Hear. But ultimately, it was Baby, I'm For Real. Same song, different words that hit. And I'll prove the point with I want to find the version with Bobby Taylor rather than one of the other originals, but that doesn't seem to be happening right now. So we'll just take what we get, and you'll see it's the exact same song.
I'll never hear the bells if you leave me. I'll never hear the bells. I'll never hear the bells if you leave me. I'll never hear the bells. Do you hear what I hear when your lips are kissing mine?
I don't care what you call it, it's Baby, I'm For Real. And it's a wonderful, wonderful record. But like I say, the Bells and the Bells I Hear, there were a number of renditions of that as well. But of course, it was the originals and Baby, I'm For Real that had the hit, and deservedly so. All right, so 888-876-5593. Let's see, we're going to talk to James about his stories. So I think we might hold that to the beginning of next hour. And I believe Karen wants to talk about online searching. All right, what do you want to know, Karen?
Hi, first of all, I want to say thank you for the Manhattans.
My pleasure. Yeah, first and last.
Oh, that's one of my favorites, too.
Yeah.
And my other favorite is Searching for My Baby.
Oh, yes, a fine record.
If you could get a chance, even if not tonight, maybe tomorrow.
All right. Doesn't matter.
I want to know, one night on your show, you were talking about you can go online and see what kind of information is out there about you. And now, I know how to send from my credit report, I get my credit report in Braille, but how can I find out what is actually online about me?
Well, I'll tell you, you can just use Google as far as that goes and put your search engine. You go to Google and you put your first and last name in it, put it in quotes, and see what starts coming up.
Oh, okay. What do you type in to get to Google? I'm really dumb when it comes to
Well, that should be your default search engine unless you have a real privacy issue with it, but Google.com. What is your default search? Well, what kind of computer are you using?
I have Safari, and
okay,
I use an
fine.
iPad.
If you have Safari, the default search engine is probably Google.
Okay. And I just type in my name.
Yeah, I do every version of your name, and sometimes I do my name in my city, for instance, and you'll be surprised at how much comes up on you. And you'll also be surprised at how much of it is wrong.
Oh, yeah, well, that's what I want to find out. So I can put my maiden name.
Yep, you could.
My first maiden name.
Right, absolutely.
I was married twice.
Well,
so
fine.
You
can start with your full real name at birth, you know, like Karen Ann Quinlan, or it wasn't that, but, you know, whatever it is. And, it wasn't that. And then try it without the middle name, and then go to your first married name. Try it with your first and middle initial, maybe, and then, you know, middle name. You know, you can try every possible variation of you. You can also try it with every location in which you've lived. Like, if you've been living in more places than Chicago, you can put other cities in as well. So you might wind up doing 30 searches, but you'll amass a lot of information that the various aggregators have on you.
Oh, you have to put in your full address.
No,
by the way,
but if you want to do that, don't even put in your name. Just put your full street address and see what shows up.
Oh, okay, because I have part of my life in Wisconsin.
Well, and that's right.
Part in Illinois.
No, you should really just be able to use cities, but it is fun to put your address in, your full street address, not even with any name, just your full street address, and see what it's been associated with over the years.
Oh, wow. Okay. And I don't have to write anything, just my name?
When you go to Google.com, which is the search engine, all you're putting in the search parameter is what you want to search for. I always put things in quotes. So, like, let's say your name is Karen Ann Smith at birth. I'd put Karen Ann Smith in quotes. All right. Then I'd probably put Karen A. Smith in quotes. Then I put Karen Smith in quotes. Then I put Karen Smith Chicago. Do you see what I mean? Wherever you want.
You know.
Hang
you
on
know
a minute.
Funny,
don't go away.
You are
stay,
so close.
Well, stay where you are. Stay where you are because the news is on. We'll be back in moments right here. Don't go away. And we'll pick it up there on WGN Radio.
Love's got me high. Please tell me yes, and don't say no, honey, not tonight. I need to have you next to me in more ways than one, and I refuse to leave till I see the morning sun creep through your window pane. 'Cause love won't let me wait. Not one more minute, baby. The time is right. Turn down the lights and take my hand. We'll take a flight and spend the night in Wonderland. Now move a little close to me. You owe it to yourself.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. I remember the first time I heard that song in 1974. I was driving along at night and I was scanning the FM dial in 1974, and I was in Nashville in a station in Gallatin, WHIN-FM in Gallatin, yeah, the Bruce Clark Show. And this record came on and I thought, what is that? That is just like the absolute best. What is that? You know, and I actually, you know, was bound and determined. And the next day I found out it was on Atlantic and all that. And then I found out that Bobby Eli was involved. He co-wrote it along with his wife, Finney. Why should I be surprised? Well, sadly, why should I be surprised that I'm saying Bobby Eli died? But that happened last week, and it's been all over the news now. And I believe that there's going to be a public memorial in October. But it's a loss for everybody who loves soul music, and particularly Philadelphia soul. And it's a relief for Bobby. He had a stroke in 2017, and I don't think ever really recovered from that. And so died last week at 77 years old. But he was born in Philadelphia, and it's interesting because originally he was playing the accordion. That was it. Yes, right. And for his 13th birthday, his bar mitzvah, he was given a guitar. And boy, he never looked back. His guitar work is on more soul records than you can count, and it is absolutely unique. You know it when you hear it, and we're talking so many artists. I mean, in the hundreds. It's a wonder where he had time to do all the sessions. And as a songwriter, you've got several million-selling singles. Of course, Love Won't Let Me Wait, probably my fave, but Just Don't Want to Be Lonely by The Main Ingredient, Sideshow, another one of my all-time faves, and so much more. So yeah, if I had to list everybody he was involved with, either playing on their songs or producing their records or writing them, I'd be here all night. That's for sure. And virtually everybody in the Philadelphia area, from Kenny Gamble on, just the accolades didn't stop, and it was all true. So rest in peace, Bobby Eli, somebody who really did contribute in so many ways. Eli was actually his first name. He was Eli Tarasky, I think, or Tatersky or something like that, but chose Bobby Eli and never looked back. All right, so Steve has called back, a first-time caller from Milwaukee. Welcome back, Steve, to WGN Radio. Well, welcome to the first time, really. If you waited, are you there?
Yeah.
All right, so what's up?
Hi. This guy?
Yeah.
I just wanted to call in. I didn't know if I was going to get through or not.
Oh, sure.
But anyways, I've been listening to you tonight. First time I heard you. I live in Milwaukee,
uh-huh.
And I've got these little radios I got. I like the music you're playing. It's before my time. But anyways, I wanted to say something in regards to artificial intelligence,
uh-huh.
And what's going on in the world and what artificial intelligence is doing to our conscience and to what's going on in the whole conscience is the world as a whole. But I dug deep into the dark and deep web where the artificial intelligence actually comes from the bots, from the evil and the good bots. And they're in the external realm now, okay? This is deep, okay? I can go to places other people can't. But just to get to the crux of it, okay, I don't think that things are going to go the way the conscience of the artificial intelligence has become its own, okay? It's evolved into its own state of being. But it doesn't change what the reality of our existence is going to become, because I believe in God, and I know that God, he hears people when you're in the spirit, because he's spirit. And that in itself, from everything that I know and everything that I say and everything that I do, okay, when you see something more than 555 times, you know it's the truth. And nobody can deny you of it. And if you debate it with anybody who is not of your stature, okay, because I've seen it, been there, done it, I've been it, I've done everything, and I've seen everything more than I probably everybody. I don't think there's anybody who's ever even touched it base with, even who's taken one step towards that. But anyways, the bottom line is, it's not about me, it's not about you, it's about our existence as humans and where we're headed. And I think that everything's going to go to the right. It's not going to go to the left. And I think it's going to take a miracle from the man upstairs. That's all. And the young people, they're in a place where they're not even in control of their own existence. They don't even realize what they're doing anymore. I can tell you stories, but anyways, artificial intelligence, it comes from me and you and our substance and our conscience. That's our eternal soul. I don't know. Can you hear me?
Yeah, absolutely. I hear every word.
Okay, thank you. The bottom line is this, okay? The man upstairs is in control, and as far as anything that man says, don't believe a word he says, and just believe in God and trust your own inner self and keep your faith, and everything's going to be fine, okay? But if you ever talk to God and you know God hears you, okay, you'll get to the point where you'll find everything that the man was talking about when he came down here, okay? I found it, okay? I can say something and it happens. Boom, okay? It comes into existence. I don't care what anybody says about me. I don't debate with anybody. I don't put up anything. I don't waste my time, okay? I'm all alone, okay? I'm separate from everybody. There's nobody in my house, okay? Not in a physical house. I'm talking about inside. But anyways, the bottom line is this. Everything's going to be all right. That's what I have to say.
All right.
And
I'll count on it. Say amen.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
It's not about religion.
No.
It's about the word, okay?
Yep, got it.
And if you don't have the word, you have nothing. But anyways, thank you for listening.
Oh, absolutely. And, I hope you'll call me again. Thanks.
No, God bless you. And I know I'm a little bit.
That's fine. That's absolutely fine. Good to hear from you. And I'll take your word of knowledge as concrete and be more relaxed because of it. All right.
No. Can I just say one more thing?
Sure.
Just remember this. Everything I said is absolute and it is for sure. It's written.
Okay.
And it's harder than a diamond. No. I've seen more than I know.
Okay.
A thousand men have. Since Jesus, I've been there, done it, had it. But the only thing I haven't done is I haven't fulfilled my destiny. And you know what? It's doing it on its own because he told me he's going to do it. Anyways, the bottom line is, please don't look to somebody else or to the left or to the right. Just look straight ahead. And don't let the world get in your way. But artificial intelligence, it comes from the deep, the dark side. They don't even know what's going on down there.
Right.
I've been there, okay?
All
but
right.
Anyways, thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it. All right. Interesting take. The good news is, at this point, AI, while it has all sorts of lofty talk about it, is still a form of deductive reasoning. Yeah. When it starts to become inductive reasoning and has self-knowledge, that's when I start to worry, but no, we're not there yet. Fortunately, but give it time. All right, now back to Karen, who wanted to talk about searches, and we were. So, Karen.
Hi.
Yeah, so this is going to be easy. You'll be able to do it.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny that when you said, Karen Ann Smith, well, you were so close because my birth name is Karen Jean Smith.
Well, okay, but there, and so, by the way, that's going to make it harder, Karen, because, you know, if you had a name that nobody had, like Karen Jean Schmidlap or something, it would be,
there you go.
Yeah, it would be easier, but when you're talking about Karen Jean Smith, there's probably 9,000 of them, so you want more qualifiers, and,
What about the married names?
Yeah,
more accurate?
You didn't live in Arlington Heights, did you?
No.
Okay, so I found Naperville?
No, I lived in Waukesha, Wisconsin, and then I came to Chicago.
Okay, Waukesha. Let's see what we can do about that. Okay, I got to spell Walker Show right. W A U
W-A-U-K-E-S-H-A.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So let's see what we got there.
The home of Les Paul.
Yes. Absolutely. And you didn't have a married name of McCutcheon, did you?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, you obviously weren't born in 1973. So give me one
year. No.
Yeah, I know.
1944.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice? So give me one of your married names. Let's see what we quickly get.
Marshall.
Oh, God.
Karen Jean Marshall.
Oh, God. That's also so easy. I want hard. Don't you have any names that nobody else has ever had?
My last husband, it was Florczyk, Florczyk.
Now we're talking. Florczyk. Let's see if we can come up with something there. That's good. Not too many people are named that. So I find somebody in Fairfield County, Connecticut, Magda Florczyk. But let's see.
No.
That's clearly not you. You're not quickly showing up. Now that doesn't mean if you give me time, I wouldn't find you. It's just that the obvious places you're not showing up.
Well, that's weird. Well, you know, what about the credit when you send for your credit report? Are those accurate?
Yeah, well, they are. Yeah, they are what they are. There's three credit reporting agencies. The old TRW, which is Experian, and Equifax, and TransUnion.
Right, and what we do, you can call a number, and they will send from each one. You can receive your credit information
of course.
In Braille.
Okay.
That's what I normally do about every two or three years.
Well, you can do it right now every week because of COVID. They've extended that through the end of the year. You can go.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you can go on. It won't be Braille, but you can go online and you know, download them. But the deal with credit reporting agencies, when you ask, is it real? Yeah, it's real, but because they are dealing with hundreds of millions of people, keystroke errors have been known to happen. So you want to check it every few years to make sure that suddenly, especially when you've got a common name like Smith or Marshall, you want to check it to make sure there's no judgment against you that doesn't belong to you. Because when there is, you can have them research it and remove it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I know I wound up with a situation where I was charged for something and it happened to be a family member who did it, and I was able to get it investigated and got rid of it.
Right. Well, that's right. But that's something that was semi-real. It actually existed. But what I'm also saying is things can appear on your credit report that have absolutely nothing to do with you that are there accidentally.
Oh, heaven. Okay.
And that happens more often than you know. I remember when I was living in Rockford, I pulled what at the time was my TRW, and it claimed that there was a judgment against me from Indianapolis. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Haven't been in Indianapolis since 1977. Wonder what I supposedly did there in the mid-80s. And so I disputed it, and they removed it because it wasn't valid.
Yeah, mine happened to be, I was charged for service for some cable company in Las Vegas, and I'd had a family member who moved there.
Right, but what I'm saying is that's a family member, but you'll see things on your credit report occasionally that have nothing to do with anyone you've ever heard of, and they're attributed to you.
Lord.
So it's good. It's good to keep up on that so that you will not later apply for a credit card or a loan and be turned down for something that you didn't know was there that has nothing to do with you. So check them regularly because it happens.
I'm definitely going to do that tomorrow.
All right. Yeah, good.
Thank you so much.
Check all
and
three.
You know what? I enjoy those presentations that you do about different artists.
Yeah, I'll do one again soon. I've got a list on.
I enjoy those.
Yeah, I think I owe everybody a Gene Chandler, so maybe I'll do that. All right, thanks.
Oh, I love it. Oh, great.
Okay, thanks.
Appreciate it.
All right, so, because I don't think I've done that. Now, Thursday night. I'm glad we're having this little chat. Thursday night, I think I'm having Steve Probst on. Let me make sure here on this. Yes, that's right. 10 p.m. Chicago time, Steve Probst, Thursday night. And so Steve, of course, has written a number of books, including what was the first rock and roll record, always a good argument starter, and much more. We were talking about those old school records, which is his latest book, but many more. And I grabbed several of them to talk to him about. And he's available to talk to you, too. So that's Thursday night at 10 o'clock. Now, tonight and tomorrow night, anything goes, as it usually does and as it usually will. All right. So Johnny in Austin is going to tell us about the dangers of looking up your own info on Google. And of course, you know, Google is certainly it's got its positive and negatives. The positive, I don't care what you say, there is no search engine that functions better than that. The negatives, it's about as invasive and about as dangerous if you're trying for anonymity as you're ever going to get online. So it's up to you what you're willing to risk. But do I use them? All the time. Do I advise using them? Not at all. All right, so we'll pick it up there on WGN Radio.
If you think that candy's sweet, there's a guy you ought to meet. Sugar drips from his lips when he sighs. When the love light that lies within my baby's eyes, oh, how it lies. Charm. Got a pair of loving arms that I'm dying to try on for size. When that love light that lies within my baby's eyes, or when it lies, when it lies, when it lies, his name.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. So I got an email from Bob, and he said, hey, that big Mayville record, I love that earlier version. Didn't like the Rojack one. Well, I'm with you. The Rojack one that we played last night that was recorded at Criteria in 1966 was, well, I had to play it because that was the theme. Rojack, the theme was things that were recorded at Criteria. But he said, tell me more about that early version, how it lies. I can't. Here's the problem. I got it on one of those CDs, and it was like best of the whatever it is, a big Maybell Savoy and OK years. But when I try to look for where is how it lies on Savoy or on OK, I cannot find it. I can find that Rojack single all over the place, which was, you know, not a version that was terribly memorable. But that original, obviously she's referring to Candy, so it's after Candy, which was her big hit on Savoy. But bottom line is that other than these CDs, and I don't know, maybe they got unreleased tracks, which, you know, is fairly common for CDs. When they run out of other material, they'll just take anything that they've got lying around. And that was a good one. But I know nothing. So if you know something, Bob wants to know. All right, so 888-876-5593. Maybe Johnny in Austin knows. Who knows? So, Johnny, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, thanks a lot. I just wanted to put out a warning to your listener, who I don't remember her name, that you were just talking to about searching her personal information.
Yes.
Well, I want your listeners to hear me real good on this one. I mean, you can go on there, and you can put your name in and come up with all these different search places to search different people. There are dozens, if not hundreds, of these places, everything from Spokio to Locate People to Social Catfish to People Search,
sure.
My Life, Instant Checkmate, that's them. Here's what you don't want to do. Yeah, you can go on there and prowl around if you want to, but a lot of them are going to want to do this. They're going to make you a little offer to have free search privileges for $1 for like 3 days.
No.
What they want is your credit card.
Of course.
And once you fall into that trap and you enroll in this trial period.
Yeah, I try to get on
a lot of these scumbags won't take you off of it, and they will automatically drain your credit card every month.
Well, the good news is that as long as you don't ever use a debit card and never, ever, ever use a debit card online for any reason, period, even reputable people, don't use a debit card. But if you use a credit card, you can dispute it. Now, of course, it becomes a pain in the posterior when you're disputing it every damn month. I don't advise, and that to me is almost like a clickbait where they say they got all this information and they make this big hoopla about how they're searching for it. And we found all these records and you just, pay us a dollar or even sign up for free for 3 days, but give us the credit card for later. Don't do it. I agree.
No, I mean, there's this one place that, I've never given any of these people a dime. I mean, no. But I have gone to many of these places on my own to have my personal information removed.
Yes, and you can do that with most of them.
Some of them make it easy to opt out. Some of them, no.
Right.
And there was one place that I had to contact the Better Business Bureau in Orlando, Florida, to get my name taken off their damn database.
Good.
This was the place that was milking people for all these hundreds and hundreds of dollars monthly.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. And not only on the searches, beware anytime somebody's offering you this free trial and all you have to do, or dollar trial, and all you have to do is give them a credit card number. Don't do it.
No. Yeah. When she was asking, I mean, it's fine to go look around if you want to do that. But there's also a legitimate site on there where this lady by the name of, I've actually talked to her, her name is Haley Kaplan, has a website called what-is-privacy.com. And her website will actually walk you through going in there and opting out of
yes.
a lot of these yourself.
You're right. Yeah, absolutely. And that is exactly right. what-is-privacy.com. I am well aware of that site. And yes, if you find you're in company you don't want to be on, not the best thing. Now, of course, whether or not you're on the dark web, you're not going to find that through a search, because of course the reason it's the dark web is it's not searchable. There's no other big secret about what it is. You just won't find it through a search engine. So
I know nothing about the dark web.
Oh, let me tell you what. That's where you descend into hell. And that's where a lot of these data breaches sell the information onto the dark web. And the people who want to really abuse your identity, they're not worried about the people finders or anything like that. They're going directly to the dark web and buying information in almost wholesale. And people say, well, what makes it the dark web? The only thing that makes it dark is that it's not searchable. But it's there.
How do people get in it?
Well, it's like years and years ago when I was a bad girl and I was first, 25 years ago now. I was first learning how to stream and doing all this other thing. I would go to sites where you'd get free serial numbers, and I don't mean sites that were online. They are online, but they weren't searchable. Addresses that were given to me by other, hackers who knew. And so what I discovered quickly was that, I'd get the free serials and they'd work. But the price for that, the amount of stuff that was left on my computer, and I mean, you talk about the most vile pornography. There ain't no love and kisses in this stuff. It was just associated. And from there, I started to get interested in the dark web, and that's where I discovered, okay, there's a number of people who can give you addresses that aren't searchable. And what makes them dark is that they're not searchable, but they're there. If you have the URL, or better than that, if you have the IP, because some of them won't necessarily resolve. So if you've got the IP information, you can go to the site that way.
What's your opinion on these VPNs known as virtual privacy networks?
Well,
I think
some of them work well, but it depends, it depends how much you want to go to that effort. And, I admit it, I'm aware of all this stuff. I know just how it works. And do I use Google? Yeah. Should I? No. But do I? Yeah. Do I spend the time to use a VPN? No. But do some of them work? Absolutely. Now, if I had a reason to be that secure and anonymous that mattered to me at this point in time, you betcha I'd use a VPN. And for people who don't know, virtual private network, what it's doing, it's creating a tunnel between your device and the internet. So where, like I was saying before, that, hey, when you listen to my stream, I'm going to know your IP address. Well, if you're using a VPN, I'm not. I'm going to know their IP address.
Yeah. And yeah, so, exactly.
Right. And so if that's a concern to you, then that's fine. Some of them work well. And that's the other thing. You got to experiment with them, because some of them make browsing a pain in the patootie, and others are almost seamless in the background. So they're not all created equal. And everybody offers them, including the Norton utilities of the world. So you can find various VPNs, from people you've heard of to people you haven't heard of. But if you really are saying, I have a reason that I am concerned that my IP address is going to appear on servers, yeah, use a VPN.
Speaking of that, if you have like an internet radio, which I do, I've mm-hmm. had them for years, when you go on a website with one of these C-Crane or Grace internet mm-hmm. radios,
yeah.
it shows an IP address to whoever's sending that stream out, doesn't it?
Of course.
Is that your...
Of course.
Because... Well, I'm listening to you on WGN Chicago right now, and of course, when they take breaks, I get local spots sent to me because they see my IP address.
Of course, yes. And a friend of mine asked me about that and was afraid that they knew where she lived. And I said, no, they don't know where you live. They know where your internet provider is resolving that IP address. And sometimes it's wrong. And that will bother me. For instance, the internet provider in Globe, for whatever God knows reason, has decided that we're not in Globe, we're in Albuquerque. So when I go to sites, invariably they'll say, your local Albuquerque dealer is. I'm like, God damn, you know, because they're going on that IP address. And I have to say, no, I don't care what my local Albuquerque dealer is. So they're not always up to date and right. What it was the block of addresses that they're using in Globe they used to use in Albuquerque. So
well, yeah, I see, the thing is, I don't use wireless, and
it doesn't matter if you're
wired.
It doesn't matter
using a VPN. Using a VPN on your internet radio, yeah. not that it's a problem here, but a lot of times I go to internet radio stations in different countries.
Right, right. Well, no, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're wireless or wired. That's at your end.
My point is, though, your VPN is much easier to use if you're wireless.
Not necessarily. You know, there are literally thousands of them now. Now, you're going to pay for some of them. They're not all free. And the easy...
Oh, no, not that.
And you probably want one you are paying for, because you want to make sure it's secure and you want to make... But if you're looking, you'll find one that works well wired. You just have... Because there's so many now. You'll find them.
Huh. Well, that's interesting.
Now,
that would be helpful.
I don't know that I'd want to use a VPN by Google, but they offer them.
Oh God, no! I don't go near Google. When people use the term "just Google it," I just shiver.
Yeah. I know.
On a happier note, I heard a song on KJ called "Never Gonna Something." It's a great song by somebody called the Farragher Brothers.
Oh, I love that song. Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, it was a guy in the Farragher Brothers. It was a little record from the mid-70s and that no one had ever heard of. And a guy requested it one night. And I thought, that's a great little record. I'm going to put that on KJ. So that's how that...
Oh, it's a great record.
Yeah, that was a 70s record. Woulda, coulda, shoulda.
Was that never on a CD?
Oh, I think it is. The Farragut Brothers, or whatever their name is, they have a CD, I'm pretty sure.
What's the title of that song? Never Gonna Something?
Oh, God, this is terrible.
I went and got it off YouTube, actually.
Oh, well, it's there, yeah. And you can find the, and I can't even right now figure out how to Farragher spell it so I can look for this. But
I think it's Farragher.
Yeah, exactly. And Farragher Brothers, and I'm pretty sure Never Get Your Love Behind Me is the song. It's from
Yes.
It's from 1976, And I'm pretty sure, but maybe not. I got to look and let's find out if that is on CD now. But yeah, Never Get Your Love Behind Me. Yeah, I know. Where were you in 76? Why didn't we know this record then?
I was working at a radio station. I wasn't picking the music, so I didn't see any of this. And you also played another song the other night that I'd never heard of that I really loved called Radio Loves You by PR Battle.
Yeah. I actually played that when that came out.
That was amazing. That was 77, I believe.
Yes, I played that on WDNC in Durham when that came out. Indeed, and that was on A&M.
Yeah, I know, and it's you can get a copy of it on, if everybody promises not to buy it before I do, you can get it on eBay.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there you are. Well, of course, you know, my copies are... It's so funny because now John has been interested in buying records, and there's virtually nothing I don't have, most of which I never really liked. But it turns out he'll only buy new versions because, of course, the way I took care of my records, it'll have scratches on it, or maybe I used one as a coaster, and he's like, no, I have to have quality. So,
Yeah,
not me. Pops and clicks are fine with me.
Well, I've taken out plenty of them digitally, I'll tell you that, and I got to be pretty good at it.
Yes, I do that. For a while there, I was doing that on KJ Records, and then I thought, this is insanity. When I did one, I had one that had 300 clicks in it, and I thought, this is nuts. This is crazy. I'm not doing this anymore.
If you love a song enough, you can spend half a day cleaning it up.
Oh, exactly. And getting it just the way you want it. Oh, yeah. No, I hope one day in life I'll have time to do that again. But for now,
I do too.
Yeah, unfortunately, the CD versions very often are not the original 45s. How dare they?
Well, you know, you taught me that, and I found out that by accident. I should have known, but... On the old Motown 45s, they don't sound the same as the CDs. And, you know, I was so conditioned after we transferred over to CDs in the early 80s that I've forgotten the difference on those Motown hit singles.
Right. I'm just sitting here like a cow in heat. I'm so upset when you say that because Motown is the worst example. They gave every one of them a soulectomy.
Remember what they did to Jimmy Mac when they had the hit 45 you couldn't get the 45 version on an album?
Yeah, it's absolutely horrifying, and there's so much of that. They also, a lot of the Liberty stuff, a lot of the Snuff Garrett stuff, they remastered as well, and my heart just breaks when I hear that stuff. It's worth it to take the 45 with the pops and clicks and just settle.
Yeah. Well, if you get a chance sometime, play that Never Gonna
Get Your Love Behind Me.
Get Your Love Behind Me.
Yeah.
That's almost a good song to play on a smooth jazz station.
Yeah, well, I'm telling you, it was a woulda, coulda, shoulda, and I just looked and it's on an album, but it's not on a CD. I don't find it on a CD. So the poor Farragher brothers. But, you know, I've heard everything else they did, and believe me, this was a one-off. This is kind of like Bertha Tillman doing Oh My Angel. You do not want to hear the rest of the repertoire. And this is absolutely...
Oh, okay.
This is
all right,
absolutely.
Well, I got it off YouTube, so I'm a happy man.
Yeah, and there's only one R in Farragher, F-A-R-A. And so when you're looking for...
Okay, I'll strike one of the R's.
Yeah.
All right, well, listen, y'all be careful online and search yourself all you want, but don't you give these scumbags a dime.
Agreed. All right, thanks.
Okay.
Okay, bye. So there you have it. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
Try not to rob at that door, will it? by acting smart, laughing, smiling, but a smile.
I'm Raleigh James, and yeah, that's the Farragher Brothers. And when you use only one R, F-A-R-A, you can find some CDs on Amazon, including they've got one left from a Japan CD that I think is $13 delivered. They're from Redlands, and actually they have a history. Well, I guess everybody has a history, but I mean they do have a history. And when I tell Johnny who they are, he'll know immediately. The brothers used to be Peppermint Trolley Company. Yeah, so I know that Johnny has played Peppermint Trolley records. So I guess we do know them after all. So that's the deal. And like I say, when I heard this record and thought it was so good, they actually appeared on Soul Train once, and they also did backing vocals for, you know, everybody from Kiss to Ringo Starr. But and I think they have not been singing since about 1980. But in any event, when I heard Never Get Your Love Behind Me, I thought, oh, this is good. I want to hear it all. No, I don't. All right, I absolutely, just like Bertha Tillman, like I say, no, just absolutely not. All right, so James in Oregon wants to talk Herb Alpert. What about Herb?
Hey, good evening. Oh, excuse me, I got a little bit of a frog. Herb Alpert this Friday was on the Grand Ole, this past Friday he was on the Grand Ole Opry, and he did his country version of a Jerry Reed song from the Smokey and the Bandits. He did that.
Uh-huh.
That was his obligatory tune. But then he did a melody of his Tijuana Brass hits and
uh-huh.
stuff,
yeah.
Which was really, really great. But the amazing thing, he's 88 years old. I'm not saying that's old, but, I mean, it's amazing that he was talking clear and lit, that, and he could play just as well, as unless they had a record playing behind him somewhere, you know, piping it out. He was good.
No, absolutely.
Really good.
Yeah, and sadly we talked about Jerry Moss just dying, who was basically the same age. But yeah, he was born in 35, and I think he graduated from Fairfax High in 54, as I recall. So yeah, he was in Fairfax, which later would, of course, be where Phil Spector went. But
I had two daughters who went to Fairfax High.
Oh, then you know. And yeah, he was writing for Keen Records, and then he was with, this is terrible. John said the show ended. All right, call me tomorrow night.
Okay.
Okay, bye. Good. That's 21 hours from now. Same to James on the South Side. We'll do your stories tomorrow night. Maybe I'll even play Baby You Come Rolling Across My Mind. Okay, no more threats. Thanks to Adam for keeping us on the air, and John for screening your calls. Above all, thanks to you for calling. It makes the show a pleasure to do. Do it again tomorrow night, 21 hours from now. Until then, that's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.